Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to another episode of the Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network, with your host, as always, Kevin Cunningham. Going to be talking about the NBA playoffs today, basically just running through what happened last night, as well as going through every other series, too. But I definitely want to talk about last night's games, for sure. But before I do that, again, our website is theredlightsportsnetwork.com. That's where all of our archive podcasts are. That's where all of our blogs are. Just recently, we've got a domestic violence podcast up on the site. We've got a fantasy freeway show, which that show was about daily fantasy lineups for the MLB and NBA playoffs. Got a blog that I wrote just on, you know, my takes heading into the first series of, or the first round of every NBA series. Got some March Madness stuff up, but that's obviously done and gone. But also, top right corner of the website is a DraftKings logo. It's a click and go logo. If you click on it, it'll take you right to DraftKings. Basically, you know, if you haven't heard of DraftKings, you were probably living under a rock for the last year or so. That and FanDuel have kind of taken over the fantasy world, so to say, on a daily basis at least. And with DraftKings, you can, you know, set lineups every single day. Doesn't matter the sport. They've got, you know, NBA, MLB. They've got soccer stuff. They've got plenty of stuff going on every single day. And some of it, honestly, is free. But as far as the lowest you can bet, so to say, is a quarter. And then obviously they've got some high-stakes stuff like, you know, $100,000 per thing, which I can't say I've participated in. But I have done a couple, you know, dollar, $2 things and did well over the NFL season. So it was fun. If you check out the site again at theredlightsportsnetwork.com, click and go logo for DraftKings is on the top right. You can follow this show on Twitter at RLSN Basketball. That's where all of our, you know, my timely tweets are regarding, you know, last night's games, for instance, Boston Celtics stuff, because I'm a Boston fan. They obviously lost last night. I'll get into that in a bit. But anything regarding Twitter, follow us at RLSN Basketball. Me personally at KIDCUNI, but if you're just looking for basketball, again, it's Twitter handles at RLSN Basketball. So, getting into the games, got, you know, roughly 42 minutes here. Last night, the first game was, I believe it was Cleveland and Boston. Yeah, that's what kicked off first. So, again, I said I'm a Celtics fan. If you want to check out the website and my blog, you can, in regard to what I thought each series would pan out to be before each series started. And for me, even as a Boston fan, coming into it, I knew what Boston was about. I know what Cleveland's about. To me, I saw a sweep. Now, that's not me, you know, being anti-Boston, obviously. That's not me thinking that the Cavs are this unbelievable, unstoppable team either. But I do think that the Celtics could take at least one game from any other team in the East. I still think Atlanta's better than Chicago. Unfortunately, we won't be able to see that series most likely this postseason. But I do consider Atlanta to be the second-best team in the East. There was talk about whether Boston should tank a game or two at the end of the year because they had a playoff spot locked up. It was just a matter of, you know, would they be 7 or 8? And, you know, typically you would think that, especially with what the Cavs bring at you, that Boston could have taken a game or two from Atlanta. They both play, you know, exceptional team basketball. Obviously, Atlanta's got more talent. That's why they won 60 games this year. But, you know, Boston last 36 games, they won 24 of them. You know, to go 24-12 over the last 36 heading into the postseason, I don't care how much talent you do or don't have, that's still an impressive streak. You know, it's not a fluky 8-2, 9-1, 10-game streak, which still can speak to how well your team can play when they're clicking. But over 36 games, that's a solid amount of time to evaluate a team. And to win two-thirds of those games, you know, 36 games out of an, 82-game season, you know, you're looking at nearly half the games. I mean, 41 is half. That sample size is looking at 36. Yeah, just looking at the standings, I'm going to pull them up, but obviously Boston probably wouldn't have won two-thirds of their games, but if they had 53-29, they would have actually finished above Cleveland if they had kept up that 67, quote-unquote, winning percentage of two-thirds, still been under Atlanta. But, you know, again, that's obviously not to say that Boston is better than Cleveland, because as we're seeing now, Cleveland's a better team. You know, there's no debating that. I thought Boston might be able to win one, but, you know, more than that, that was insane to me. So I went with the sweep, and that's what it's looking like it's going to be. You know, last night Boston, again, came out, and they weren't off to as hot a start as they have been the first two games in Cleveland, which I thought was kind of interesting. They still play with a lot of heart, no question about it. But last night, it was basically indicative of what I figured this series would be, that, you know, Boston would fight their hearts out. They won 40 games for a reason. They almost won 500 after a terrible start. You know, to start the year, I'm sitting here as a Boston fan hoping that they lose to get a higher draft pick. And then they roll off 24 of 36 down the year, and they're a seventh seed in the playoff. Obviously not what I was anticipating would happen. But toward the end of the year, it's like, you know what, if you give us a 16 pick instead of the 12 or the 13, and we make the playoffs as opposed to missing it, it's probably worth it. It's worth it for Brad Stevens. It's worth it for whoever on this team of B players does stick around for the long haul and doesn't get dished off for a star, at least, if not two. You know, I know Danny Ainge isn't going to hold all 39 of the team's draft picks that they have over the next 2 years. It's not 39, but it might as well be. It's like 15 over the next three, or 17 over four, or something ridiculous. But, you know, they have, like I said, a bunch of B players, it seems like, and they're just looking to play hard, and Brad Stevens gets that out of them, and Brad Stevens gets them to play well as a team for the talent that they do have, which is all you can expect from a coach. I mean, he's certainly elevated this team. There's no question about it. People want to throw him in there for Coach of the Year consideration. I would agree with that. Obviously, the Hawks coach won it, but you know, I consider Stevens a top 10 coach in the league. I wouldn't put him in the top five, probably. But I do think he gets the most out of his players. And for a second-year head coach, that's pretty impressive, being 38 years old. I'm pretty sure he's 38. He's either 38 or 39. But to command an NBA locker room and to be the focal point for a team this early in his coaching career, as young as he is impressive. I have to give him his dues on that. I didn't like his Butler teams just because basically there was no reason behind it. I just disliked them. I'm also a Duke guy, so them playing Butler in the final was scary to me, especially when Butler nearly won it on a buzzer beater. But I knew that the guy was a good coach. And he got the most out of his players. Butler isn't the second most talented team in the country 2 years in a row, yet he got them to the final 2 years in a row. So, you know, the guy can coach, and he's showing it here in the NBA. So the future's bright in Boston. It's just a matter of who on this team is going to get dealt and who is not. You know, more into the game last night, it was just time and time again that the Celtics, you know, might move the ball around perfectly on offense for 20 seconds, get an open look, and miss it. It's just a matter of talent. They went 5 of 19 from 3. They shot 26% from 3. Cleveland shot 41%. So it's not, you know, it's really not that difficult to understand what's going on in this series. Boston probably plays better team basketball. But talent-wise, when you just start ranking the players, you know, that actually play games, you got about 10 Celtics, 11 Celtics, which is crazy, considering the postseason. Cleveland goes 9 deep. I think most teams go probably 9 deep, 8, 9 deep in the postseason. And Cleveland's just, like I said, talent-wise. You take Kyrie, you take LeBron, you take Kevin Love. Those are the top three. Then fourth, I would probably take Isaiah Thomas. But that's where you get your first Celtic. Just based on who's the best player is in the series. When you have the top three players in a best of seven game series, you're going to win pretty much every single time. I mean, it's almost impossible for you to lose if you're the top three players in a series. It's just, you know, there's not much you can do. You can play great team basketball, but if you're just that much out talented, I think that Miami had the case that it was more talented a year ago. I don't think they were, but even if they were, even if you said that they did still have the best two players, I guess, I don't think you can go three, but the Spurs just obviously had more talent a year ago than this Boston team does. And so instead of shooting 26% from three, they shoot 45%, because that's just how efficient they were last year. It was insane, in the postseason especially. But so, you know, if Boston hits three more threes, they get 9 more points. This is obviously a different game. And same with the first couple games. Cleveland hasn't been blowing them out. Boston's been playing hard. You know, especially at home, I figured Boston would show up. I expect them to show up in Game 4, but if Cleveland were to run away with it by 15 because the Celtics just run out of gas, that wouldn't shock me. Being down 3-0 mentally is, you know, when you know you're the I can't even think of the word. But when you know you're the worst team out of the two, down 3-0, inferior team, you know, you basically know you're dead. I mean, that just is what it is. The first two games, Cleveland won by 13. Boston still played their hearts out. Cleveland won by 8 in the second. Boston didn't lead in the second half in either of those two games. But so Cleveland, I still anticipate the sweep. As a Boston guy, I love how hard they're playing. To me, I would rather see this getting the 16th pick than seeing them get the 12th pick and not earning postseason experience. And the other thing is, again, Danny Ainge is looking to dish some of these players for a star. That's without a question. So to put them on the postseason pedestal and just have them out there playing for GMs and owners of other teams to see what these players are like, that also helps their value. Even if they do get swept, you still like certain things of what Evan Turner did last night, despite my dislike of him. You still like what, you know, a majority of these players bring. I love Jay Crowder. I hope him and Isaiah Thomas are two guys I really want on this Celtics team for the future. But everyone's going to be available depending on who Danny Ainge can bring in. I don't think there's one guy that's untouchable. So that's Cleveland-Boston. I do still see a 4-0 sweep there. Staying in the East, might as well. Last night's game, Chicago-Milwaukee was the next one. I didn't get to see much of the first three quarters, probably. Got to see most of the fourth, and the two overtimes, for sure. For me, heading into this series, I thought Milwaukee would pull out one. I still think they can, but it's crazy seeing some of these minute totals. Jimmy Butler posted 53 minutes last night. 53 minutes. 24 points, only 3 rebounds and 2 assists. That surprises me for 53 minutes. Derrick Rose played 48. Shot over 50% from the field, over 50% from 3, made 5 of them. I'll say this, that in my blog heading into these first round series, that I basically said that Rose is done. He's never going to be what he once was. I still stick with that. But he's playing pretty damn well. Playing as well as he can, I think. It's still not what he once was, but he's playing like an A-minus player. He used to be a superstar. I don't think he ever will be a superstar in this league again. He was a superstar. I think he's playing like a star, like an A-minus guy, like a LaMarcus Aldridge type guy. You can't say, hey, we have LaMarcus Aldridge, so we have the best player in the series, so we're going to win. You can see that in Portland, Memphis. He's the most talented guy in that series, but he's not carrying you in that series. A guy like James Harden can, even though I don't like James Harden necessarily, he can carry you in the series. LeBron can. And you're seeing it with Rose, not that he's carrying Chicago, because, again, he's not a superstar, but he is an A-minus type player that, he's playing at an all-star level again. He is. I don't think he'll ever be what he once was, but he's playing pretty damn well. 34 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. Obviously, these numbers are all, inflated because of 2 overtimes kicking into it. But point is, he shot 12 of 23 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. That's, what you can judge him on. And again, him playing 48 minutes, that means a lot to Chicago fans and what their potential is going forward. Pretty crazy, the rebound battle in this game. Milwaukee had 50, Chicago had 50. The first two games, I don't have them up, but let's see, I'll take a look. I'm assuming Chicago murdered them on the boards. In the series, that's what, was the difference for me. Chicago's obviously got more talent across the board. Defensively, I would probably give the edge to Milwaukee, but offensively, since the Brandon Knight trade, they just don't have guys to go to, so to say, offensively. Chris Middleton is a nice player, and he is a great shooter, but they don't have go-to guys in the postseason, which it seems like unless you have unbelievable ball movement, you need guys that can step up and get you a bucket with 7 seconds left on the clock. And you've got nowhere to go on offense. You just give that guy the ball and you hope. And Milwaukee just doesn't have that. Let's see. What was this? Game 2, I think. I believe so. Game 2, Milwaukee had 64 rebounds. Chicago had 64 rebounds. Milwaukee had 48. I rebounded them by 16 in game 1 to open it. Milwaukee had 41 rebounds. Chicago had 52. That's, ultimately when you have Mirotić and Gibson and Noah and Gasol going up against Henson, Zaza, Ersan, that there's a difference there, clearly. So Chicago's got the advantage on the perimeter with Rose and Butler. They've got the advantage inside. They're just the better team. Milwaukee, like Boston, has a bright future. You know, I think Giannis and Parker are the staples of that future. I think that Middleton is a very good third piece for what he can shoot the ball like. So, you know, in this series, again, the Bulls are just the superior team. Milwaukee's got a good future, out of, like Boston. I thought Milwaukee would pull a game out. They still can. I think it's got to be game four. But, again, being down 3-0, knowing that you're the inferior team, is difficult mentally. I won't get into what I think of Cleveland-Chicago, but I will say that, again, I think Atlanta's the second-best team in the East. You can build that around what I think of the Cleveland-Chicago potential matchup. So, before I stay in the East, the top half of the bracket, I'm going to go out west in last night's game, Golden State and New Orleans. Golden State's jumpers weren't falling in the first three quarters. I believe it was 89-69 heading into the fourth. And that's when Golden State showed their number one defensive efficiency rating. You know, they held New Orleans to 19 points in the fourth, which it's very solid. I mean, you know, that's giving up 76 in a game if you give up 19 every quarter. So it's obviously really good defense. But at the same time, when you score 39 in a quarter, that's what makes Golden State Golden State. Their offense may be down, quote-unquote, in scoring 69 through 3. You know, and being on pace for, what's that, 23 a quarter? So 92 in a game, you know, yeah, that's a poor, so to say, offensive showing. The fourth quarter, they obviously got things rolling, which that's Golden State for you. Yeah. I don't think Curry played all that amazing, even though he had 40 points, 9 assists, 5 boards. Again, there's an overtime thrown in there. But he shot 7 of 18 from deep. That's about what he averages. Maybe a little worse. I don't have the exact percentage on it, but you're looking at probably around 40%. So, you know, obviously played well, but 10 of 29 from the field in general, so 3 of 11 outside of three-point range. That's not spectacular. You know, barely over. Probably shot 35% from the field, 40%-ish from deep. So, you know, he's not the hero, even though he had the hero shot, which the whole hero ball thing on NBA Tonight after the games. That was funny. Gotta love that show with Shaq, Charles, Kenny, and my name's the host, Ernie. But yeah, the Warriors started out, I think they were up 17-9 to start it, and that's pretty much when I flipped the channel to, I think, Milwaukee for a few minutes until the Boston game Boston was, what was going on? I forgot why I didn't, I think I just stayed with the Milwaukee game. But yeah, I flipped off this game for a while. Obviously, New Orleans had their thing going on for the rest of the first quarter and the second quarter, and then the third quarter, they also won that by 9. But the fourth, I pretty much saw all of that, as well as the overtime, obviously. And Golden State, for me, they just turned things on in the fourth. That's, you know, pretty much all it was. Anthony Davis is great. He's going to be an all-star for the next 10 years, no question about it. 29-15, shot 50% from the floor. I'm not enormous into plus minus, but Quincy Pondexter was minus 31 last night. that. If you're minus 31, your team's gonna struggle. if you're minus 31, that's insane. I mean, as close as this game was, it went into overtime. You know, if he's minus 30, maybe they win by one. But Golden State's lowest plus minus was minus 12. There's a slight difference there. 3-pointers, Golden State shot 41 of them. They only made 14. But they actually still shot a better percentage than New Orleans did. New Orleans shot 6 of 21 from 3. Again, Golden State's got the superior team. New Orleans can hang with them for a while. Anthony Davis is a mismatch, even though Draymond Green's on the other side. You know, he doesn't have the length that Davis has. He doesn't have the size that Davis has. I said going into the series, the only guy size-wise that can compete with Davis is Bogut. Obviously, Bogut, you know, gets out-skilled and isn't as quick as Davis. So, you know, Golden State's, New Orleans has a mismatch to go to every single time, and it's their best player. It's a top three player in the league, top five, you know, at the worst, in regard to Anthony Davis. But so they've got a puncher's chance in every single game, but especially at home. But, you know, I thought the Pels would pull one out at home. This is probably the one they needed to get. But, again, I thought they would win one. Golden State would win in five. But again, knowing that you're the inferior team, not as talented as Golden State, down 3-0, it's just tough mentally. All three of these series, the Pelicans, you know, probably are the most ready team to win now, even though they're not, you know, ready to win a postseason series. They're the best team, so to say, out of the three that have lost last night. But going against Golden State, it's difficult. Staying out west, let's see, Golden State's the one, so the 4-5 matchup that they could play. Portland-Memphis, their next game is Saturday, tomorrow. So I'm not going to go insanely deep into that series, but Memphis is just clicking defensively. They're showing their will. Team physically more than anything. Portland has a tough time scoring, especially if Lillard's not going. Aldridge is, you know, like I said, I think he's an A-minus player. I think he's really good. He's a top three power forward in the game. But they're just, without Wesley Matthews, they're just offensively, it's hard to get going because I think Lillard is overrated. I think Lillard's a good player. But he's not as good as guys like Aldridge. He's 10 point guard in the league, I don't think. He's probably top 15, but I think I can pull off 10 point guards that I would rather have than Lillard, which I don't think most people is true. I do, but that doesn't make me right. I just think that Lillard is overrated a bit. I like him. I really do, but I do think he's overhyped. Memphis in the series, you know, I what is it? I think I had Portland in 7. Or maybe I had Portland in 6. One of the two. But regardless, I had Portland winning. I just thought offensively they could score more than what Memphis put out. That hasn't been the case because Lillard struggled. But, you know, if Lalo's supposed to be back for game 3, that'll help a little bit, but it's looking rough for Portland. Memphis looks like they're going to win that one in 6 at the latest. So I'd be wrong on that series. You know, been right on the easy 3, Chicago over Milwaukee, Cleveland over Boston, Golden State over New Orleans, but that series, Memphis-Portland, I've been dead wrong on so far. Staying in the West, might as well. 2 games tonight. the 2-7 matchup, Houston-Dallas. Again, I've been wrong on this series as well. I thought that Rick Carlisle would be enough to give Dallas the edge over Houston. I didn't believe in Houston heading into this series. Ultimately, when you have Dwight inside defensively in the postseason, that means something. That means more than most people think it does, I think. Offensively, he's never going to be dominant, that's for sure. But defensively, he makes things difficult for Dallas. Dirk defensively is not too good. But so Houston, game one, they put up 118, game two, 111. I think, you know, the series switches to Dallas, and there's no question that Dallas wins one of these next two. The question is whether they can win both. I thought Dallas would win this one in six. Game six is at their place. I thought they would close things out there. If they can win both at home, then this series takes a different turn. If they only win one, yeah, then maybe this series can go to a game seven, but at Houston, I would still favor Houston. So, it looks like I'm going to be wrong on this one. The whole Rondo thing, I could hours about that, being a Boston Celtics fan. But ultimately, I'm happy for the trade. I'm happy to get Jay Crowder. I'm happy to be able to dish Brandon Wright for a pick or two, whatever it turned out to be. But that whole Rondo mess, before the Rondo deal, Dallas had the number one offense going. So he wasn't going to necessarily help them offensively. Defensively, he's just not trying. So he's not going to help you there either if he's not trying. That's as I'll go into it. But I picked Dallas in six, and it looks like unless Dallas wins these next two at home, they're in deep trouble. Down 3-1 going back to Houston. Houston's got two games at home to finish it. It'll be tough to win all three if you're Dallas. And then the last series, the 3-6, Clippers and Spurs. Let's see, what else do I have out east? The 1-8, 4-5. So Clippers-Spurs, you got about 10 minutes left here, so just scheduling things out in my mind. Clippers-Spurs, San Antonio was a game away from being the 2 seed. That's how close things are, 2-6 seed-wise, not necessarily talent-wise, because I think San Antonio's the best team of the bunch. But those people counting out the Spurs after game one, I wasn't one of those. The Clippers played as well as they could have in game one. The Spurs played about as poorly as they could have. So to see San Antonio respond, put up 111, that's what San Antonio does. Their offense is insane. That's what they're going to do in the postseason. They're going to put up over 100. Clippers scored 107 in the first game, won by 15. Clippers scored 107 in the second game, they lost. That's the Spurs offense getting going. Second game, obviously they put up 111. Not so poor. These next two games in San Antonio, you know the series is going to at least be 2-2. Can San Antonio win both? Yeah. I would almost expect the Clippers to have a backbone and pull one of these out, giving the Clippers the advantage home court-wise for the last three games of the series. I would still expect, though, if this is 2-2, going back to L.A., I would still expect the Spurs to win in six. Call me crazy. But I think San Antonio would get one on the road before getting back home in game six. Ultimately, I've pretty much, said my thoughts on this, that San Antonio is the superior team when their offense isn't playing like crap, basically, is what it is. Clippers have great guys in Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. Redick's a good shooter. Crawford's good off the bench, but, if your whole bench is reliant on Crawford, And offensively, Blake's not. He should be a go-to guy in the series, but he wasn't in game two. If you're San Antonio, that offense to me trumps anything. Timmy D playing 44 minutes. Kawhi Leonard playing 39. That speaks to what Tim Duncan is capable of. He played the most minutes for San Antonio a couple nights ago. Put up 28-11. Kawhi 23-9. Tony Parker's questionable for game three, which is enormous. It's funny. I was saying Blake Griffin wasn't necessarily a go-to guy in game two. He put up 29, 12, and 11. I just think that he should be putting up, not necessarily 11 assists, but he should be putting up those kind of numbers because he does have a mismatch when he is on offense every time down. The Spurs don't have an answer for him defensively. So I think those are the numbers he should put up. He even said it himself that game two is on me. That's why we lost. Matt Barnes playing 35 minutes, going 1 of 10 from the floor doesn't help you. That's Matt Barnes, though. The bench is just... Crawford had 11 points, but he shot less than 33% from the field. Glenn Davis, 0. Rivers, 4. Turkoglu, 2. Dante Jones, 0. He played a second, so can't really count him. But that's the Clippers' bench. It's just not good. Compared to the Spurs' bench, it's, night and day doesn't even begin to describe it. So the other two series, you got Atlanta playing Saturday, Toronto tonight. So I'll go with Toronto, Washington. My computer's about to die here. I was an idiot and forgot my cord, but so there goes my computer. I still got around 5 minutes left. But so, Toronto, Washington. Toronto looks like crap. They have since the All-Star break. Kyle Lowry has not looked good. Washington, I don't think they're this great team, but I think Atlanta's still the second best team out east, but in Washington's not great. But with how hurt and not at 100% Atlanta is, if Washington made it an interesting series and were to upset Atlanta, it wouldn't be a shocker to me. I still expected Atlanta to potentially win that series, but both these teams are up 2-0. Toronto, Washington, I don't have stats in front of me to look at. But that was the thing to me that, I picked Toronto to win this in seven. I thought the two teams, would flip games back and forth, basically. And Toronto having game seven at home, I thought they would be able to pull it out. The one thing that Washington needed to have happen for them to win was for Wall to outplay Lowry. Heading in, he was going to do that, and that's what he's done to this point. Lowry just has been bad, essentially, since the All-Star break. I think he's an All-Star caliber player, but going up against John Wall, if you're struggling, that's advantage Washington all day long. You add a guy like Pearson there that has the postseason experience, certainly more than any other player on either of these rosters. Washington just is just playing like the better team right now. And so that's, what they've done. Two games at home. This is another series that I've been wrong on. Toronto's not going to win both in Washington. This is at least going to be 3-1. And then Washington's got three shots at wrapping it up with only one game at their place. But up 3-1. Toronto playing not well. I expect Washington to close the series out. It's just a matter of when. Maybe game six, but they'll win the series, and my prediction will be wrong. The 1-8, Atlanta again up 2-0. I forget how many shots it was. I wish I could have pulled that up before my computer passed out. But Brooke Lopez, I don't remember what it was, but I think he shot 9 times in game two, and that's where Brooklyn has the advantage. So if you're not going to exploit that mismatch inside, at least give him a touch on 4/5 of your possessions. Just give him a touch. Whether it results in him passing it back out, 2 seconds later or not, give him a touch. Because if you're Brooklyn, that's where you have to go to with the basketball. So for him to attempt 9 shots or whatever it was is insane. You're not going to win the series if you're Brooklyn, if your best player and mismatch inside is not touching the ball regularly and putting up shots fairly regularly. That's where Brooklyn has to go to. Atlanta's obviously the superior team. They have more talent. They play better team basketball by a mile. So for them to hold home court absolutely doesn't shock me. As far as a sweep goes, I want to say I picked Atlanta in 4. Pretty sure I did. And that's going to hold true to me. Can Brooklyn pull out 1? Yeah, they can, but I don't expect it. I think Atlanta is that much better than Brooklyn. Ultimately, if you're not giving Lopez the ball inside on a regular basis, then that's just, they have no shot at winning a game. I still think they do, but they've got to change the way they're attacking Atlanta. So, the Hawks were basically a barely above average defense the second half of the year. That's why they weren't as dominant as they were in the first half of the year. Defensively, they just weren't the same. If you're Brooklyn, you've got to put up better numbers offensively. And again, for the millionth time, that leads to giving Brooke Lopez the ball more inside. So I see Atlanta closing that out in 4 as well. So a few series that certainly haven't gone the way I've expected. But for the most part, the easy ones, they're going, as everyone's expected them to go. So again, it's been great talking playoff basketball with all of you. You can follow the show again on Twitter at RLSN Basketball. You can like us on Facebook, Red Light Sports. You can follow Red Light Sports on Twitter. Check out the RedLightSportsNetwork.com. That's got, again, all of our blogs and podcasts archived regarding, a variety of sports, including fantasy stuff, DraftKings, top right of the website, click and go logo to help fulfill your fantasy needs, so to say, that in the sports category of things. But so yeah, check out the RedLightSportsNetwork.com if you're into any sport, especially NBA, NFL draft coming up. We'll have plenty of stuff regarding that, blogs and podcast wise.